ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
It's another week of the Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. Joining us this week is Daily Maverick Managing Editor for Gauteng News, Sukiswa Pikoli. Here's what's coming your way. The Gauteng cabinet is crumbling and the ANC, DA and EFF struggle to see eye to eye. Then, startling claims made by the former CEO of VBS Mutual Bank. But are these just the ramblings of a man desperate for a lighter sentence?
I think turning state witness will always be for the purposes of the person's own self-preservation. However, the validity of those claims is something that's going to obviously be tested, and this is what we need to get to the bottom of.
Why appointing a jaded former judge to the JSC has experts concerned. And some closure in the Life Esidimeni tragedy. But first, just days into his tenure as new Sports, Arts and Culture Minister, Patriotic Alliance leader Gayton McKenzie ruffled a few feathers as he pushed ahead with his campaign to weed out corruption within his department. Some have celebrated his move to be more transparent, but others are saying pump the brakes. Welcome back to the Whole Week Wrap, Sukiswa. How have you been in this frigid weather?
Hi, thanks, Lizanne. I've been freezing as with everybody else, but I'm probably in a better position than the people in Cape Town at the moment.
Oh, absolutely. So this week's episode is all about politics, and we need to start with one politician in particular that's been making headlines this past week. And that's, of course, our new Sports, Arts and Culture Minister, Gayton McKenzie. Now, I said last week that I think Gayton will surprise us, and boy, did he surprise us. Shortly after his ministerial appointment, he said we should expect, quote, massive changes within a short space of time. And he went as far as saying that in 100 days, if he hasn't delivered on his promises, then he will essentially reshuffle himself. He won't wait for the president to do that. He announced his intention to firstly pull the plug on superfan funding at various events. And there was a mixed response to that, some saying this would be detrimental to Brand South Africa. And then others are saying, yes, the funds can be used for more important things. Where do you stand on the whole superfans matter? Let's start with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it needs a balanced approach, right? Because without the sportsmen, without the actors, without the musicians, will there be any fans? And so I think there is an argument to be made that if the athletes are struggling with funding to be able to perform in their own sports and the artists are not getting the just dues, we cannot then be prioritizing super fans, because what we need to prioritize is that these people are able to perform their jobs to the best of their abilities, and the resources are being taken away from them or redirected away from them, I'm not sure that's the best position to be in.
And speaking of funding, there was obviously also the very big announcement that left many seeing red for different reasons. And this was, of course, the COVID-19 relief fund lists that he published. And up until Friday, he was still releasing lists. It showed exactly how much money was given to whom during lockdown. Of course, that was a period that many athletes and artists were unable to make a living due to the very strict lockdown protocols. Yeah. And then you had media personalities and artists and athletes basically coming forward saying, hey, this is undermining our dignity by essentially putting us out there showing that we received these grants. And they were like, this is not cool, man. But others have lauded the move, saying, we need transparency, we welcome transparency, and this is a good start.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a double-edged sword, right? Because there's the revelations that from a perspective of not wanting to be put into a position of being humiliated and your personal life kind of put out there. However, there's also the other aspect of it, which is that there's a lot of these people who received funding that probably didn't actually even need that funding, whereas it could have been given to people who are a lot more deserving. But I think the argument there was that there's people who seem to consistently be able to get funding, while a lot of people don't get funding. So that in itself kind of alludes to some sort of system of patronage and abuse of power. Mm. And somehow some people manage to get contracts and gigs, whereas others are barely surviving.
In terms of just speaking to Mackenzie's personality, I mean, if there were any doubts, I think he made it very clear now that he doesn't wait around, because initially he was advised that please don't release these lists before we've had our Mbizo where we've discussed this matter. And he was like, I'm not going to wait for this. So that also speaks to the kind of leadership, so to speak, that Mackenzie will be enforcing, that he's not going to wait around for someone to tell him, okay, you can do things. But I'm wondering if this isn't just, in the early days, political grandstanding for him to kind of create this facade around him, or is he truly a man of the people?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it remains to be seen, right? It's easy to talk a good game in the beginning. Also, before you even understand how processes even work in terms of how government works, I think he may want to just slow his roll there, but we appreciate his zealousness in terms of, you know, trying to get his portfolio up and functional again, because as we all know, that department has been dysfunctional for a very long time. And so we need somebody who's going to have enthusiasm and energy. However, we also must be cautiously optimistic, because politicians tend to kind of err towards populism. And so we need to be, let's not get swept away just yet with the grand statements and grand gestures. Let's be very sober-minded still.
It took much longer than expected, but Gauteng finally has a cabinet. However, when it comes to unity, this newly formed government of provincial unity falls short as the DA opted to walk away from the deal following several weeks of heated negotiations. While experts don't see this crumbling GPU impacting matters on a national level, residents of Gauteng are in for a bumpy ride, as now matters between the ANC and EFF are also hanging by a thread.
Now, keeping to cabinet matters, I want to turn our attention to the Gauteng cabinet. And I mean, it's off to a very wonky start. The newly formed provincial cabinet was, of course, marred by controversy and a bit of nastiness, really, with the cabinet announcement being postponed three times before Premier Panyaza Lesufi finally announced his government of provincial unity, or GPU. Now, at the heart of the conflict is the Democratic Alliance claiming the ANC outright refused to give the DA more seats. And there's a lot of back and forth about how many seats were promised and how many were given. But ultimately, the DA withdrew from the GPU. So this has me wondering, what's the point of having a GPU if there's no real unity?
Yeah, I mean, I think this concept of unity and government of national unity and provincial unity is really kind of being put through its rigors. It's being tested to see how well actually these political parties can work together towards the best interest of the country or the provinces. And I think this contestation specifically in Gauteng has been very revelatory of how much unity really is at the center, or is it really about power brokerage and who gets the most power and who doesn't? So if it's going to be a contestation around seats as opposed to actually just delivering what people are actually expecting from the government, it becomes very worrying for both the ANC and the DA.
And many political analysts have said that the ANC's decision not to include the DA after it walked away, and basically not really trying to bring them back into the GPU, will be detrimental, not just to the ANC and the DA, but to residents of Gauteng as well. So what does this actually mean for the voters?
I mean, the voters obviously are not going to be served as best as they could have been had the two actually agreed to working together. I think it's necessary that we also understand that an opposition actually does have a very important role to play, because they act as the watchdog, right?
Yes.
Because there's this argument that's been made that being brought into this government of national unity may actually turn the other political parties into sweetheart parties now, right? Because we are now aligned with the ANC, and therefore, because the ANC is in the majority, you know, and you're being given a slice of the cake, you're susceptible to co-option. Whereas when you are on the outside, your job is to actually make sure that processes are being followed, the people are being served. And I think there's two ways of thinking of it in that sense.
Allegations of hush money and sinister meetings between high-ranking government officials made headlines last week after an affidavit written by now convicted former VBS Mutual Bank CEO Chifiwa Matodzi was leaked. In it, Matodzi claims to have paid millions of rands to keep National Treasury in line, while also allegedly funneling funds to the EFF. On Friday, former National Treasury Director General Dondo Mohajane denied ever receiving a bribe from the VBS chair, stating, "I was one of the people who stopped Matodzi in his tracks and prevented VBS from pilfering South Africa any further." Meanwhile, several political parties have demanded a new investigation be launched into the EFF's Julius Malema and Floyd Chivambu's alleged involvement in the VBS heist. The party has referred journalists to past statements in which the EFF vehemently denies any involvement.
Now, I want us to move on to a really big story that broke last week, and that's the dramatic developments in terms of the VBS mutual bank heist matter. We firstly saw the disgraced former VBS CEO, Chifiwa Matodzi, pleading guilty to 33 counts of corruption, theft, fraud, money laundering, and racketeering. I mean, it's a whole mouthful. He was sentenced to 495 years or 15 years on each count, but because the sentences are running concurrently, he will only serve about 15 years behind bars. Firstly, I want to know from you, did you ever think we would get to a point where we will see actual convictions in the VBS matter?
I've always been optimistic. I do believe in our legal system, as sometimes it can be frustrating and legal processes take a really long time because, as we know, the wheels of justice take a long time to turn. But when they do turn, these are the results.
Yes.
And so I think this has been a great moment for us justifying to our justice system, but also to say you may think you're getting away with something, but for as long as the legal system is working in a functional mode, these are the results.
And what did you make of him essentially turning state witness? Because he made some really big claims, and we'll get into some of those claims, but he's made some really big claims in terms of other individuals who profited from this network of corruption. Mm. Is it perhaps a man trying to save his own backside, or do you think there is some validity to some of the claims that he's making?
I think it's probably a bit of both. I think turning state witness will always be for the purposes of the person's own self-preservation. However, the validity of those claims is something that's going to obviously be tested, and this is what we need to get to the bottom of. So I think for me, what's more important is how much his turning state witness is going to actually bring us closer to the conclusion of this case and to bring the people who are responsible to book, all the people who are responsible to book. I mean, it's a lot of people.
You know? Yeah. And obviously, the big focus fell on the EFF. Once again, Julius Malema and Floyd Chivambu were drawn into this, saying that they received monthly payments to essentially clean up the bank's muddy reputation and kind of not set its EFF protesters on the bank. But I think for me, the bigger claim that was made is that the former Director General of the National Treasury, Dondo Mohajane, was also implicated by Matodzi, saying that he essentially accepted a million rand bribe to make the VBS matter disappear within the National Treasury. I think Daily Maverick described it as a hand grenade kind of thrown into this affidavit of Matodzi. What do you make of that claim and some of the other really startling revelations?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big claim, right? Treasury is like one of those really pivotal departments. I mean, in terms of the other claims, that what the EFF was even doing with that money, buying restaurants and upgrades to Malema's home and all of these things, it's quite damning. And for a political party that claims to be about the economic empowerment and upliftment of poor people, that is as damning as it gets, because that does not reflect in the actions.
And for me, I think at the end of the day, it still remains that the people who lost money through the VBS bank heist, they're not going to get a cent back, and they are still left with their entire livelihoods gone. And I don't think that any amount of accountability will really make their lives any better. It's a symbolic gesture at most. That is the most heartbreaking aspect of this, is that the people who genuinely lost the little that they had will be left suffering for years and years. And it might have generational impacts as well for many families.
Yeah, for sure. That's always the most difficult and heartbreaking with these kinds of cases, because these really were people who don't really have much, right? Mm. And a lot of people are like grandparents, and they're supporting their children to go to school and their grandkids to go to school. And this is what you mean by the generational impact, that now some children may have been robbed of those opportunities, of being afforded opportunities to better their lives, to lift themselves out of poverty and to get a better life for themselves and their families going forward. And this in itself has set them back so far. And they just sit and bear the brunt of that. It's kind of like you're just pushed further into the poverty trap and inequality trap that we have in South Africa. And that's just terrible.
Now, for our listeners, if you want to find out more about this very explosive affidavit written by Matotsi, you can head on over to the Daily Maverick website. They have everything there, including the several pages of annexures. It's really, it makes for some startling reading. Of course, it must be emphasized again that all parties implicated in Matotsi's affidavit have denied any wrongdoing. The Judicial Service Committee is, among other things, tasked with appointing individuals to serve as judges in our various courts, as well as persons responsible for investigating complaints against judicial officers. Maintaining the JSC's integrity and independence cannot be overstated. And it's for this reason that several legal experts have taken issue with the appointment of disgraced former Western Cape judge John Tlope to serve on the JSC. The decision, backed by the ANC and EFF, led to widespread outrage and now legal action. Let's move over to our courts. In a move that angered many, impeached judge and MK party member John Tlope was appointed to serve on the Judicial Service Commission. The former Western Cape judge president was impeached, of course, for gross misconduct in his attempt to sway two Concord judges in the arms deal matter against former President Jacob Zuma. This means that Tlope will effectively be serving on the same body that found him guilty of misconduct as a judge. And it's just, honestly, I can't fathom why the ANC and EFF thought that this would go down well with civil society and opposition. It's just mind-boggling.
You know, the truth is often stranger than fiction. I think this is one of those incidents.
Yes.
It's actually the most unbelievable thing. Like, how can they expect the South African public to have faith in this person who has been so discredited? And then he goes on to the legal body that is responsible for the selection of judges. And there's so much that goes into the selection of judges, what is expected of them. How is he going to be a good judge of character? How is he going to be a good judge of judicial efficiency of these judges who are going to be appointed? So it's absolutely ludicrous for me.
And non-government organization Freedom Under Law, or FUL, has already stated that it will legally challenge Tlope's designation to the JSC. But I'm wondering, even with the pressure from various organizations, do you see National Assembly backtracking on their decision, or is this a done deal and we just need to make peace with it?
I guess it remains to be seen what comes out from the legal challenge and what would obligate the National Assembly to abide by the legal challenge, right? But I think it's worth testing to see, is this something that can really hold water? I don't think it's something that should be taken lying down. I think the merits need to be tested. And I think if we're going to have people in position or high office that are of questionable integrity, it's well worth challenging. We cannot just sit back and accept them.
In 2015 and 2016, more than 140 mental health patients died following a decision by the Gauteng Health Department to relocate over 2,000 vulnerable patients to various unlicensed non-government facilities ill-equipped to care for them. Some patients died of starvation, others malnutrition and pneumonia. And to this day, scores are still missing. It's a tragedy that was completely preventable. Now, a judicial inquest has identified two former government officials it believes should face criminal charges for their role in the deaths of 9 patients. Sadly, many more families are left with little to no closure.
Last week, the Life Esidimeni inquest found that former MEC for Health in Gauteng, Pledane Mahlangu, and former Provincial Mental Health Director, Dr. Makgabo Manamela, can be held criminally liable for the deaths of 9 Life Esidimeni patients. The inquest found that despite being warned by several industry experts at the time that this move will be detrimental to the patients, Mahlangu and Manamela went ahead. They decided, we don't care, we need to cut costs and we're going to move them. Finally, we are seeing some accountability in this terrible tragedy, but really this is a tragedy that never, ever should have happened.
No, for sure. I mean, incidentally, I must tell you that I was at Section 27 during the arbitration of the Life Esidimeni case, and I covered the inquest for 3 years as a journalist. So this is something I feel quite strongly about. And I really feel like it's such an injustice that has been shown to those families and their family members who ended up dying in this tragic project. And one of the things that I've always noticed was the callousness with which the MEC and the mental health director had actually even shown towards these proceedings. And I think it's really great that the justice is finally being seen to be done.
Definitely, because this has been a long and very, very painful road for the families. So it's great to see that finally there is some accountability, but it doesn't end there, because now the findings have been handed over to the National Prosecuting Authority, obviously for them to consider whether criminal charges need to be put against both Mahlangu and Manamela. Some legal experts have said, charge them with culpable homicide, don't waste any time, they're as guilty as can be. But for me, I can't help but wonder about the families of the other 133 patients, whereby the inquest found no one could be held liable for their deaths. And for me, that is such a bitter pill to swallow. I don't know really even what to make of that. It just does not feel right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is probably one of the more sort of baffling and probably maddening parts of the judgment, because what do those families do now? What do they do with their grief? What do they do with their expectation for closure? What do they do with the sense of a lack of justice that they're probably sitting with now? Because it also kind of almost invalidates their pain and suffering and the death of their loved ones. So I can only imagine what they're going through.
And I just want a final comment from you in terms of whether government actually learned anything from the Life Esidimeni tragedy. Because looking at the state of social development in Gauteng and the Eastern Cape, where we've also done many stories on famine and children going hungry, I just can't help but see another similar disaster in the near future, because it feels to me like we're just repeating the same mistakes in different ways.
It's difficult to say that government learns anything from these incidents and these cases and reports that are produced and warnings that are issued by civil society organizations, because there was a report that was released on the state of the Northwest health system. And the issues that are being found consistently, particularly in the health system across the country, say to me that our health system is in crisis, and I'm not sure the lessons are being learned. It's almost as though you kind of move from one crisis to another. Cumulatively, I don't see what the changes are. Our state of our hospitals in themselves is just absolutely deplorable from a public health standpoint. So I really worry that the lessons are not being learned here. And I think there's a lack of leadership, and a leadership that's dedicated to actually improving the lives of our people.
Now, before we wrap up today's show, I just want to touch on the Western Cape. And I just want to say that we at the show at Carte Blanche and Daily Maverick, we send our condolences to all the families impacted by this past week's storm. It's been terrible witnessing the flooding and the devastating winds, and people are left homeless. I mean, thousands of families are out in the open. And yeah, we're just, our hearts and our thoughts and our prayers are with the families of the Western Cape.
Absolutely. I can only echo what you've just said. It's devastating what's happening.
Well, that's all we have time for this week. Zakiswa, you've been an absolute star as always. So thank you so much for joining us and bringing your insights to the show. This has been great.
Thanks so much, Lizanne. Always great chatting to you.
Thanks for listening. Catch us again next week for another Whole Week Wrap. Until then, why not join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else? We always love hearing from you.